Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and good morning. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Kathleen Lombardi restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Good morning, Mark.
Hey, Francis, how you doing?
I'm well this morning.
Yeah.
And I'm brimming with stuff to talk about.
Brimming.
Well, you know,
Can I tell you something?
Yeah.
I've known you for over 20 years now.
I brim a lot.
You are frequently brimming with stuff to talk about.
It's the caffeine.
No, it's not the caffeine. It's the personality.
That's true.
It's the bunk.
Caffeine only enhances. Caffeine only enhances that. All right, I want to talk about an article that was recently on Smart Money. I found it on smartmoney.com by B. Grant. The poor fellow doesn't have a first name, just an initial. We should chip in. It's restaurant tips, and this was broadcast widely, posted widely on the internet, and it was how to avoid getting scammed in a restaurant. That wasn't the title. It's
I just want to tell you something about whenever you read these restaurant tips, some of them are actually tips. Some of them aren't.
Yeah, some of them are
some
bunk.
Of them are like tip overs.
Okay, hold on. Let's talk about this because some people, I don't know, people sometimes point at a restaurant and say, oh, they're scamming me. And you know what? Some restaurants do scam. I remember
Absolutely.
One restaurant. Let's talk about scamming. I remember it used to be de rigueur in certain Italian restaurants that the waiter would come over and say, in this one I'm thinking of, they'd say, oh, certainly, you'd like the veal chop? And would you like asparagus or string beans with that?
Absolutely.
And you'd say, oh, asparagus. But what he wasn't telling you was that's extra.
Would you like $9 of asparagus or $8 of string beans with
you
that?
You know, or they'd say, would you like would you like flat water? And you say, yeah, I'll have flat water. And they bring you a bottle of water. It's like,
right.
Would you like a bottle of water this evening? Yes. Mm-hmm. Sparkling or still? As opposed to now, you know, you very specifically say tap when you mean tap. And people know. But
well, fortunately, that's something that I think people recognize now, that if you want bottled water, it's available and you can buy bottled water. But
right.
if you don't want bottled water, you don't need to get bottled water.
Right, but there were restaurant scams.
Absolutely.
Well,
and there still are. One of the things that Francis and I, we're here, I want to protect you, but what I want to protect you from, I want to protect you from the real things that are out there, not just list a bunch of things because it makes it cool, because I need 10, because it's a top 10 list.
Well, here are the five tricks that Smart Money says to watch out for. One way to impress a hot date is to utter four little words, order anything you want. Of course, if you can't afford to say that, go to a different restaurant. How
well,
rude.
That's not true. I mean, you might go to a place that has a $10,000 bottle of wine and not
we're talking about food.
Right.
We're not talking about wine. Anyway, but here's what it says. In a lot of restaurant guys, there's dollar signs, and they'll use $1 sign for inexpensive and $4 signs for expensive in the restaurant reviews, or they might even give you, like in the Zagat review, the price per person.
Mm-hmm.
Well, be aware that price per person is based on, for Zagat, for example, $102 per person is the estimate of a Picasso restaurant in Las Vegas. They just picked an expensive one. Could be anything. But that's the price of one entree, one drink, and a tip and tax. Well,
most of us don't eat that way.
Most of us don't eat that way. And so when you add in an appetizer and you add in two drinks or a glass bottle of
or
wine.
Or a bottle of wine. Sure.
You know, that's
the other thing, too.
More.
You know, so many, and here's my tip to you, okay, as far as how this works. So much of what could be on the restaurant check depends on what you drink and how many courses you eat and if you have foie gras or salad. You know, you just pay attention. If it's important to you, pay attention to what you're doing there.
I also think that, you know, people realize that intuitively when they're sitting at the restaurant with the menu in front of them.
Right.
But just realize that I think the advice is in using the guide, when Zagat says it's $50
bucks
for dinner.
Before you go to the restaurant.
Don't think that you're going to get out for $100.
But frankly.
Unless you want to order that way.
In this day and age, just go to the restaurant's website, and most restaurants
look
have
at the menu.
Or you know, at least something there that you can look at that'll give you a good idea of what you're in for.
Here's another,
and go to the great places and spend some money there if you want to, and don't go to those places if you don't feel like it.
Here's another trick. This is a trick that restaurants play on you. You ready? This is in smartmoney.com. They say the restaurants have a bar, and if you go to the bar and drink, your bill will be higher. That's a trick. That's not a trick. I have a bar. If you don't want to go to the bar, don't go to the bar.
Right, I thought.
But yes, if you go to the bar and have four drinks before your dinner,
it will cost more than if you don't. Almost every time.
Come on. All right. And restaurants invest big bucks to create an atmosphere that encourages one to linger, says Frank Bruni, restaurant critic of the New York Times. Think low lighting, cool music, and attentive, attractive waitstaff. Those bastards. Well, of course.
Theaters spend a lot of money putting musicals up on the stage so you'll go see them.
Markups on alcohol easily run twice what they cost at the liquor store. Well, if you want to drink it under a fluorescent light in aisle 7 of the liquor store, I'm sure they spend a lot less than on the couch that I built.
Obviously,
for you.
There's the idea.
That's not a trick.
In a restaurant. Of course, it's not a trick. It is. You know why it's not a trick? Because it's directly out there. Would you like to buy this or would you not like to buy this? And that's not a trick. And that's not somebody who's trying to take advantage of you. That's basically here. I'm offering this experience. If you want to pay to have this experience, you may. And the beauty of it in a restaurant is if you don't wish to pay, you know, it's not like there's a 2-drink minimum. If you don't want to pay for that, you don't have to.
Here's the one. Poppy, this is another trick. It's called popping the cork. If you're the type to build your meal around a good bottle of wine, keep in mind that when you select a restaurant. In other words, if you're going to order an expensive bottle of wine, it will cost more than if you don't. What a trick. What a dirty trick. And
the price of the bottle is on every... I don't know a single restaurant that doesn't put the price of the bottle next to the menu.
I've often thought of having a page that was like, if you have to ask, you can't afford it. Page. Just, you know, with like, you know, like 10 bottles on
but
that list.
Even the most expensive restaurants in the world have a $50 or $60 bottle of wine. Now, you're going to spend $250 a plate, a dinner at per se. And so chances are you're not worried about spending $50 or $60 on a bottle of wine.
We have a $30 bottle of Malbec, right? Mm-hmm. And we offer our wines by the third of a bottle as well. You can order a third of a bottle because we have a great wine preservation system. Mm-hmm. They actually advertise on the show now. They heard us talking well of them, and they contacted us. It's called Vinfinity. Mm-hmm. If you have a restaurant, you should buy it. But we have a $30 bottle of wine. Well, $30 for a bottle of wine in a restaurant. Say you get at 5 ounces, you get about mm-hmm. five and a half ounce pour. So you're saying that it's $6 a glass for wine if you order by the bottle?
Mm.
That's not exactly a ripoff.
Right.
You know, that's pretty good, I think.
I understand that some people are going to order $150 bottles, and some people are going to order $500 bottles, and some people are going to order $1,000 bottles. But that's a personal choice that you make, and don't let a maitre d' push you into a bottle that you don't want.
And if you're a maitre d', don't push anybody where they
don't
want
to go. And if you're a maitre d', don't push people into a bottle that they don't want. But it's my job to show you what is available to you and
your
let
options.
You pick.
And
that's my job.
And don't be offended if a maitre, if you're thinking you want to spend $50 on a bottle of wine and you say, oh, I'd like a bottle of Cabernet, and the maitre d' should ask you, well, what were you thinking, what range? And we've gone beyond the days where it's not, mm-hmm. where it's impolite to say price. So I say, yeah, a bottle of Cabernet, something, you know, under $40 bucks or something.
You've
about
never
$50.
Said that in your life.
Oh, not me. I'm never. But I'm talking for and somebody
something,
else.
Something in the $2-$2.50 range. That's where I'm good.
But here's the deal. If you don't give the maitre d' any direction, he may recommend a $50 bottle, a $100 bottle, and a $500 bottle.
Mm-hmm.
Don't be offended just because he pointed those out, and don't feel obligated to take his recommendations.
Absolutely. And give the maitre d', if as far as the wine goes, as far as give the maitre d' some inclination as to your budget, whether you point to the price on the menu or you just tell them, you know, I'm looking to spend about $50 tonight. Is there a good bottle
on
it?
There's nothing wrong with that.
There's nothing wrong with that.
You know,
and don't be intimidated by somebody.
Don't let those bastards push you around. Okay, we'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. The time is 11:15. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis, of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, New Jersey. Herb and Kathy Eckhaus are owners of La Kircha, a company that creates artisan prosciutto. They're based in Iowa, of all places. They deliver their cured meats in the tradition of Parma, Italy, which is prosciutto's origin. They've recently been awarded the 2007 Bon Appetit Award for Food Artisans, and today Herb is here to discuss their company and the very concept of American prosciutto.
Herb, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
You know, I was very excited to read about your product. Can you actually call it prosciutto in the United States, or is that a protected name in the European Union?
Prosciutto is not protected, but the areas of denomination, the geographic denominations are protected.
So like prosciutto di Parma and prosciutto di San Daniele. Yeah.
And so now exactly. We have prosciutto di Iowa.
Yeah, well, you know, that didn't roll too well, so we call it... prosciutto americano.
Now, this is very exciting for, now there is, I mean, Mark and I, you know, we love, we're all about, you know, wine, and we're really into to trying different kinds of wine, and we're, some would call us experts on wine and cheese, and but ham is right up there, man, and and a cured ham like that. We have had great cured hams that are traditional American cured ham, Virginia ham, but this is a new thing, prosciutto in the United States. Why don't you tell us about it and why you decided to do it, and then let's talk about prosciutto and how prosciutto is really made, because a lot of people love it, they just don't know what goes into making one.
Well, you know, that that idea that there are the great cheeses, there are great wines, and there are great hams, that was something that we felt also, and we felt that there wasn't really an American standard bearer to stand up to the great hams of Europe, and we felt this was an opportunity, and because we live in Iowa. Ham is made 95% from pork. We had an abundant raw material right around us. It seemed like a logical place to do it. So we felt that, you know, in Iowa there is a tremendous amount of bounty and beauty, but most of it gets turned into commodities that then get shipped out of the state. We wanted to try to make something really special from here that would express the fecundity and the richness of the resources here.
Well, now let's talk about prosciutto, because if for those, I mean, I think a lot of people have had prosciutto. But when you have a really great prosciutto, and Spain also makes great dry cured hams, and France also makes great dry cured hams, and in America we have Virginia ham, which is very sort of rough and sort of dry in texture, and you know, you wouldn't slice a Virginia ham painfully thin like we do with prosciutto or jamón serrano or jambón de Bayonne. What makes your prosciutto americano different than the American dry cured hams we get from the South?
Well, first of all, most of the dry cured hams that I'm familiar with are smoked, you know, and they're smoked as an integral part of the curing process. We don't smoke our prosciutto. We have a speck, which is a smoked product, but we smoke it after we've cured it, so we've developed the flavor. And then, you know, the other thing is that we really do make our meat to be eaten by itself and to be sliced very thinly and eaten as a, you know, an antipasto or an appetizer or even as a meat dish. So it's part of what our intent at the outset was to make something that would stand on its own and would have enough of its own flavor that it would be satisfying.
You know, Saturday night I was in our, we own two restaurants. One of them is a Brooklyn Italian style restaurant, and we sliced prosciutto to order. And one of the people was they were asking me, you know, what about your prosciutto is different than everybody else's? And one of the things that I tell people frequently is prosciutto needs to be sliced paper thin. It needs to be sliced paper thin, and it needs to be served at room temperature, because what I'm looking for in a great prosciutto, it should literally begin to melt in your mouth when you put it in your mouth. Is that what you guys are trying to create?
Yes, and you know, that is a characteristic of a really good cured ham, is that it does melt in your mouth, because the flavor develops from in prosciutto or in other, you know, like in a jamón ibérico or whatever, internally. You know, there are only two ingredients. We only have pork and sea salt. Mm-hmm. You don't have a
and
lot
time.
Of other...
Don't forget time
exactly.
Is an important
and
ingredient.
Time and care. I mean, it's people always say, well, what really makes your product special? And I say, well, you know, when you take care of something for 10 months or 12 months, there are so many things you do to it or do with it that, you know, it's the summation of all those details. So it's really not any one thing, but that's really what you're after, is that a melt in your mouth, a melt on your tongue, flavor developed. You know, one of the people who wrote about our La Quercia Rosa, which we make from purebred Berkshire pork, said that it doesn't so much as hit your taste buds as envelop them. And Robert Parker, who's a wine critic, he said that the flavor flows across your palate. And that's really what you want with that melting. And the reason that it melts is that the meat breaks down during the aging process. There's a process called proteolysis, which the proteins actually are broken down into their amino acids, which are called branched amino acids. And it's like a, it's like a predigestion, or that's what gives prosciutto that silky flavor, silky texture, and that really gentle flavor.
As unappealing as predigested meat sounds, it actually is better in the application than it is in the theory. We'll be back in just a moment talking more with Herb Eckhaus about his prosciutto americano.
And Herb, we're going to ask you not to use the word predigestion anymore.
Oh, no, I like it. Oh, no, I like it. We'll be back in just a moment. 1450 WCTC, yeah. The time is 1125.
The place, Brooklyn, New York, post-World War II. An Italian-American woman named Catherine Lombardi cooks for her family. What's so special about that? Well, lots. Food was central back then. Good food handed down from the traditions of two countries. Food that filled the whole house with the sweet smells of garlic, tomato, and basil. No matter when you stopped by or who you were, you were sure to be fed and fussed over. Catherine showed her love on the plate and out of the pot. Any who were lucky enough to receive it never forgot. This is Mark Pascal from the Restaurant Guys Radio Show and Stage Left. I've just opened Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, and its mission, to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. So come by the bar, sit by the fire. Have some fresh mozzarella and antipasto. The manicotti and tortelloni are amazing, and the veal chop will make you cry. Our wine list, of course, without parallel. We've got to live up to the standards set by Catherine Lombardi. You see, Catherine Lombardi was my grandmother. Come let me show you where I came from.
Catherine Lombardi Restaurant in New Brunswick, 732-296-9463 or CatherineLombardi.com. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi. We are talking with Herb Eckhaus about his company, which makes prosciutto americano. If you want to find out more about this, which I suggest you do, and maybe even get some on your own plate, you can go to www.laquercia.us to find the proper spelling of that and to find a link. Just go to restaurantguysradio.com. Herb, we talked before the break about how what happens with a cured ham is that it takes 10 months. You take this piece of meat, and for 10 months it's treated in such a way...
Or longer.
That promotes, honestly, decay. You talked about it. It melts in your mouth because it's almost, you know, predigested in a way, and that the proteins break down to amino acids. But, you know, when it comes down to it, with cheese, with wine, and with ham, it's a controlled process of decay, isn't it?
Yeah, you know, I'm not that familiar with either, you know, what goes on internally with wine or with cheese, but I know cheese, it's enzymatic action, and that's the same thing that you get with prosciutto. It's actually enzymes that naturally occur in the meat that have this effect. And then what the element of the prosciutto maker's craft is how to steward that, how to shepherd it so that you get the greatest impact. You know, because there are some factors that will favor that action and some factors that will inhibit that action. So really what we try to do is, you know, as we take the piece of meat through our building is to optimize that, get it to do it the right amount and not too much so that the meat actually breaks down, but enough so that we do develop a rich flavor and a silky texture. But, you know, the key thing really is getting a great piece of meat. I mean, we work very hard at that, and we have a number of selection criteria that we use. First of all, we don't use any confinement raised pork because we feel that the animals move around, the muscles are more healthy, the animal's more healthy, the animal has less stress, and those are all positive things for the quality of the meat. And we have other things like we want fat cover, we want fat marbling.
I want to talk with you. We're going to break for the news, Herb, but I want to talk with you after the news about the kind of pigs you buy and how different they are from modern agribusiness pigs. And then I also want to talk, I think a lot of our listeners would be fascinated, for you to take us through how you go from piece of raw pork to prosciutto, how it's made in 10 months and what you do to it. Will you talk about that with us after the news?
Great. I'll be happy to do that.
Stay tuned. We'll be back in just a few minutes. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. Time is 1130.
Central Jersey Talk Radio, Central Jersey 1450, WCTC with the Restaurant Guys. Call them now at 732-545-9282. 732-545-9282.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys. I'm Mark Pascal, and I'm here with Francis Schott. Together, we own Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in New Brunswick, New Jersey. We're here to give you the inside track on food, wine, and the finer things in life. You can listen to us every day from 11 to noon. Reach us through restaurantguysradio.com or download our podcast on iTunes.
Herb and Kathy Eckhouse are owners of La Curcha, a company that creates artisan prosciutto based in Iowa. That's right, prosciutto americano. First time that's happened in our history. They deliver cured meats in the traditions of Parma, Italy, which is where prosciutto comes from. And they've recently received the 2007 Bon Appetit Award for Best Food Artisan. And we're here with Herb talking about his show and the very concept of prosciutto americano. Now, the pigs you select for prosciutto americano, they're not the same pigs that we see on our supermarket shelves. You actually subscribe to the idea that if it's a healthy pig that eats a good diet, then when you eat it, that's good for you. And good for the quality of the pig. Is that correct?
That's right. You know, our selection starts with about 0.5% of the pool of pigs raised in Iowa. So we've already got it down to a real small group. And, again, that's because you can find some of this meat at the supermarket, but it's going to come under a special brand. It's going to come under a brand like Nyman Ranch, or you're going to find it in a place like Whole Foods, or you're going to find it in a place. You're going to find it under a brand like Eden Natural. And these are producers who are taking special care so that animals are in humane conditions. They're treated humanely up to the point when they're harvested, and the feed is controlled so they aren't getting hormones, they aren't getting subtherapeutic antibiotics, and they get an all-vegetarian diet.
Well, Francis and I maintain all the time that when you do that, when you raise your animals humanely and you feed them the right kind of food, that not only is it the humane and right thing to do, but the food tastes better.
I strongly believe that. I believe that we look at the pork that we get, and we look at the pork that's out there in the commodity stream, and it the color is different, the texture is different, and you know, we find that when we get pork in that we said, man, this is really beautiful meat. It ends up being really great prosciutto. And, in fact, we're doing something special this year where we're actually getting 50 pigs that are Berkshire and Berkshire Cross, and they're raised on in a pasture-based organic system, and they're going to be fed acorns.
That's awesome. In the tradition of Jamón Ibérico.
Yeah, in the tradition of Jamón Ibérico, and actually in the tradition of Parma. Parma in the 15th and 16th century was known for its ham because the pigs ate the acorns. And in fact, if you look at some of the major prosciutto houses in the Parma region, they'll have acorns or oak leaves in their logos. And that's because it's even in Italy, it's long been associated with dry cured ham quality. So we're trying to do the very best that we can. We're getting the best meat raised in the best conditions, fed the best feed. And, you know, we're going to see what we can do with it.
You know, and out there in listener land, if you're not a foodie who just happens to be driving on and have turned the dial accidentally to 1450 and wonder what the heck you've gotten yourself into, there is, this seems like, you know, I think a lot of people are surprised, and I'm always amazed when people are surprised that when you talk about the kind of meat you want to get, what we talk about when we source meat, and we actually source Berkshire pigs for the restaurant as well, but when Herb goes to source pigs, he looks for a specific breed of pigs, and then he's concerned with what they ate. And pigs that eat acorns make a particularly flavorful prosciutto, and actually it has a very particular kind of body fat on the pigs, and whether if they're Pata Negra pigs or black-footed pigs, that can actually really change the texture of what you see in the meat. And this stuff is important. And modern agribusiness wants you to think it's all a commodity, it's all the same. Well, it's not.
You know, Herb, before we talked about color of the pig, something you mentioned just a couple of minutes ago, one of the things that we found that we had to put on our menus is the Berkshire pork chop that you're about to get is going to be pinker than you think your pork chop should traditionally be based on what you see in the supermarket.
It is not the other white meat. Is that correct?
Absolutely not. I hate that saying.
Well, this isn't
going the
chicken.
Wrong way entirely.
Yeah, no, real pork is pink.
Yeah.
Anyway.
In fact, we call our the prosciutto that we make from Berkshire pork, we call it la Quercia Rosa, which means the red oak, you know.
Well,
and because the meat is a deeper, redder color.
Well, now we only have four or five minutes to get through this whole thing. But can you give us, our listeners who may not be aware about how a ham is cured and how long it takes and the steps that you go through, can you take us through how we get from raw piece of meat to a finished prosciutto that's stable?
Sure. This is a process that's literally millennia old. I mean, the first recipe that I know of for prosciutto was written by Cato in 5 A.D., so it's really something that people developed without a lot of technology and without a lot of means.
You said 5 A.D. there, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and for literally thousands of years, farm families that wanted to be able to have meat throughout the year used salt curing and aging to develop meat that they could use all through the year. And so traditionally, if you go to Italy or France or Spain, traditionally they'll kill the pig at the beginning of December, and they'll start salting the meat. They'll eat some parts of it fresh, and then they'll start salting the meat, and they'll the smaller cuts will be ready in the middle, early in the winter, and then the larger cuts kind of towards the end of the winter. And then the leg, being the rear leg, which is the part that makes prosciutto, being the largest muscle mass, it takes a lot longer. So the tradition for prosciutto, the best way for me to communicate and I think to think about it, is it's a winter, spring, summer process. Traditionally, they would salt the leg in the winter when the weather's cold. They'd use the salt on the surface and the cold weather to protect the meat. And then the salt would penetrate, and as it penetrates, it protects the meat from bacterial infection. And gradually, the winds that would come up in the spring, they'd help dry the meat, and they'd dry the meat through the spring, and then in the summer, they'd stick in the cantina at a real moderate temperature at like 65 degrees or 60 degrees and hold it through the summer. And that holding through that warm period favors that process that we talked about previously, that enzymatic action that breaks down the meat and creates that soaky texture.
So really, we
replicate that whole cycle in our building.
Now, talk to me about when you say salt the meat. You're not talking about sprinkling a little bit of salt on the outside of this piece of ham, right?
Well, that actually is what we do. We sprinkle. There are a lot of different ways to do it. I mean, again, as it's something that's been done for thousands of years, there are a lot of different ways to do it. The Spanish people stack the meat up in salt, and we hand salt. We just sprinkle salt on the top of the meat.
And how much salt does a typical prosciutto, to salt it appropriately, how much salt does it take?
Well, that's really, that's going to be the prosciutto maker's art, and part of also what will vary from one person to another. But at the end of the day, we want as little salt as necessary to preserve the meat. The salt, they say you have five taste sensors in your mouth: sweet, sour, salt, bitter, and umami. Umami is that delicious flavor that you get from aged cheeses, aged meats, and
prosciutto.
That kind of thing. And prosciutto. Exactly. And so, if you have too much salt, you're going to mask that. So we try to really minimize the salt and get those other flavors to express themselves.
So for how long can you age a prosciutto? For how long will it continue to get better?
Well, again, that's going to vary. I always say, some of us are mature at 15 and some of us aren't mature at 50. And really, it depends on what you've done to it, how dry it gets, how much salt you've put on it, and what temperatures that you keep it at.
So do you make a judgment based on each individual ham and say, okay, I think this guy's ready to go?
Well, we make a judgment based on the source of the meat and the size of the piece. And, we cut our piece very differently, say, from the way they do in Parma or the way they do in Spain. We open up a piece and allow it to be exposed to the air, and it dries out more uniformly. It means we use less salt. We feel that we get a little bit drier, a little bit silkier, and a little bit sweeter product that way. So we take less time because we've opened it up. If you keep the whole leg covered in skin, then you have only whatever muscle area that's open to get the moisture out. It takes quite a bit longer.
When we come back, we're going to be talking more with Herb Eckhouse about his company, La Quercha, which you can find at laquercha.us or link through our website, to have the first American prosciutto, prosciutto americano. Pretty interesting stuff. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. The time is 11:45. I think it's great that more and more restaurants are offering larger selections of wine by the glass. Unfortunately, I often find those by the glass wines flat or spoiled. It's been my experience that most wine preservation systems just don't work until now. The Vinfinity system was invented by Armando Luis, a mechanical engineer with over 25 years experience in the wine industry. Vinfinity has 3 US patents, but it's so simple I could kill myself for not inventing it first. Vinfinity creates a precise vacuum in the bottle that preserves the wine. Too much vacuum or too little and the wine is damaged. Vinfinity never needs gas and requires little maintenance. One Vinfinity system preserves any number of wines. We use just one system for both of our restaurants, and we're not alone. Some of the best restaurants in the country are taking on the Vinfinity system. The guest gets a large selection of wines by the glass in great condition, and the restaurant eliminates waste. Tell your favorite restaurant about it. If you own a restaurant, install it. Find out more at VinfinitySystem.com or call 201-988-5953. Hey everybody, welcome back. You're listening to the Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Lombardi Restaurants in downtown New Brunswick, and we're talking with Herb Eckhouse about his company La Quercia, which makes the first prosciutto in America, prosciutto americano made in Iowa. We were talking about, you talked about the prosciutto making process. Okay, the meat is salted, right, and kept cool. And then the meat is dried, and you talked about the spring winds coming and drying the meat. Talk about hanging a ham and how it was done historically and how you do it. I mean, is it hung from a tree for the wind? Why don't the birds eat it? You know, how does that work?
Well, you can see, if you go to Parma, you can see pictures of kind of sleds that they would put the hams on. But, you know, again, if you're an individual at home, which is what, or a farmer in Italy in, 200 A.D., you're going to have a fairly simple process. So, you know, when we made our prosciutto at home, we had a refrigerator, and then on a nice day in the winter when it's cold and crisp, sometimes I'd take the hams out, what I'd say, I would call it taking the hams for a walk. We'd take them out and we'd let them get some breeze and get some of that nice, crisp, cool air. And so, you know, I think we have, of course, a building where we have a controlled temperature and humidity, and we have controlled airflow and all that kind of thing. But, you know, for an individual making one prosciutto or two pieces of prosciutto, you just have to kind of develop a feel for, okay, this is a good day, the temperature is about 39, great time to get the prosciutto out and let it get some fresh air.
And so they'll...
Take it for a walk, as it were.
Take it for a walk.
And then they bring it back to the cellar?
And then they bring it back to the cellar to control it. And, you know, you've got a lot of other animals that are very interested in that piece.
Yeah, I was going to say, how do you keep it? If you live in an area with bears, I'd imagine that's a problem.
So, I think it would be.
So the Jersey prosciutto production is strictly an indoor operation. I mean, that's really fascinating. Let me ask you... Now, prosciutto is something, we have an antique Italian hand slicer for prosciutto in our restaurant.
A Purgle slicer, I'm jealous.
And you know, we leave the prosciutto on there, the prosciutto comes up to room temperature, and then it's, you know, the blade on that slicer is the sharpest blade in the state. You know, it'll cut your head off, in very narrow strips, though. You know, that the quality of the prosciutto that comes out of that slicer is amazing. I wonder... how, if I had a piece of prosciutto at home and I didn't have a $4,000 slicer, or even a sandwich slicer like you find in a deli, how do you get it sliced so thinly with a knife? How does someone use a whole ham at home?
Well, I think it's, honestly, when we have people calling us asking to buy whole hams, we always ask them if they have a slicer. Because I think it's difficult. You aren't going to get that same experience. You know, some hams, like the Serrano ham, a lot of times people eat those in little chunks. And you can enjoy a dry-cured ham in a chunk, but you aren't going to get that silky mouthfeel and silky feeling that you're going to get with that real thin slice any other way. You know, you guys are doing it totally right. You have a great slicer. You have you're slicing it to order, and that's really the best way to get that maximum prosciutto experience.
Well, for sure, the most pleasurable thing about the prosciutto is it changing texture in my mouth, and it's got to be paper thin to do that.
Well, you know, but the other thing is, prosciutto comes as a ham without a bone. There are other pleasures of other kinds of dry cured hams. We're going to have very soon The first jamón ibérico available in the United States is about to arrive because it takes 2 years to make. It was approved for production 2 years ago. Now, jamón ibérico is a ham bone in, hoof on. Okay, so the way that you in a Spanish household, I love the way that jamón serrano, jamón ibérico is used in a Spanish home. I spent a lot of time in Spain. You know, around the holidays, they'll take that ham leg, put it on the kitchen table, you know, hoof sticking up in the air, and you take a sharp knife and you cut yourself a piece. And the polite, you know, if you're in a kitchen, you can just cut yourself a piece and then put a rag over it, a towel over it again, and walk away. And that'll be there through the holiday season. But that's a type of ham that you can cut little thicker pieces, and there's something different about the texture of that ham that works that way. Prosciutto doesn't work that way. If you get a thick slice of prosciutto, it's just I don't really enjoy it
nearly as much.
Why is that?
Well, we're going to find out. We're going to find out with these acorn-fed pigs. I mean. The characteristic of the Iberico breed is one that it has, as I understand it from the people that I've talked to here who are our pork geneticists, that it has a very short muscle fiber. And the darker pigs, the Berkshire, the Iberico pig, the Duroc, they all have a shorter muscle fiber. So we're going to see once we get these hams made from the Berkshire pigs that have been fed acorns, just how. And we're going to cure those bone in with the hoof on also, as
That's
a matter
great.
Of fact.
You're like
and,
the ham man.
And how long till they come online?
They're going to be, well, right now we're selling subscriptions. We're doing it on a different way because we really want to kind of connect people in with this age-old process of harvesting the pig in the early part of December. I mean, you can only get acorns in the fall anyway. So harvesting the pig in the early part of the winter, eating the fresh meat and then getting the cured meat through the year. So we're doing it on a subscription basis. So the process starts in early December, and then we'll start sending out cured meat end of January, end of February, March, April. And then the first leg we'll send out after 1 year, and that will be, I'm telling people, New Year's Eve 2008.
Okay, everybody, listen up.
Hold on. For anybody looking to buy me a gift, forget about the magazines. Forget about chocolate of the month.
No,
okay?
No, I got it.
Send me pork of the month, okay?
Here's the deal, Herb. We want to do, obviously, we're going to get into the restaurant prosciutto americano.
La Quercia Rosa. I'm very excited.
But I want to get this leg in ham, and I want to serve it in our restaurant. I'll tell you right now, part of the New Year's menu 2008 is going to be this bone-in jamón ibérico americano from Herb Eckhaus. Will you help facilitate that for us?
Certainly. It'd be my pleasure.
All right. Hey, man, it's been great having you on the show. I'm afraid we need to leave it there, but your stuff is great, and what you're doing is really, really cool stuff.
Thank you very much for having me.
Thanks,
that's Herb Eckhaus's company is La Quercia. You can find it at laquercia.us, and we can link to it through our website, restaurantguysradio.com. We'll be back in just a moment. You're listening to The Restaurant Guys, 1450 WCTC. The time is 11:56. Hey, everybody, welcome back. You are listening to The Restaurant Guys, Mark and Francis of Stage Left and Catherine Labordia. I have to tell you, after talking about ham for the last hour, I know what I'm having for lunch.
We had a chef way back when, and he worked for us for 3 or 4 years in the restaurant. When he left the restaurant, he had been, and he worked for us, and we had a good relationship, and he left of his own volition and go on and do other things. But when he left the restaurant, he had been aging a ham for about 10 or 11 months. And I would say of all the things that he was saddest about as he left the restaurant...
Was not seeing his ham come to fruition.
He was not going to see the ham come to fruition. He was just like, oh, you know, I got to go. I got this great opportunity. We were like, congratulations. That's great. Good for you. We're keeping the ham.
He'll be happy to know that we let him have visiting rights to the ham. He used to take the ham on Tuesday nights and every other weekend. But
We did share it with him. I mean, we let him taste it, for sure.
That was funny. Tuesday nights and every other weekend. That was good.
But it was awesome. I mean, if you've never done that, it's a lot of fun
to
watch it grow, watch it mature.
Hold on a second.
It doesn't grow.
Okay. If you've never done that, Don't try this at home until you've read extensively about it.
Yeah, food safety is a big issue.
Because the thing about, you know, the beautiful ham breaking down, you also have the whole keeping botulism away. Okay, so let's
well, you're not going to get botulism. You're going to get some other unpleasant form of mold.
There's a lot of bad stuff going to happen. Okay, if you want to, if your grandfather taught you how to do it, he was doing it for, you know, 80 years, that'll work.
Maybe just go to the store and buy one.
Sorry. A lot of reading. Don't listen to Mark, or we're going to get sued. Hope you've enjoyed the hour with the Restaurant Guys. I'm Francis Shaw.
And I'm Mark Pascal.
We are the Restaurant Guys. 1450 WCTC. It's noon.